And you're listening to the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. You'll have heard in the news about the dog attack in North Kerry and a dog destroyed and a baby in hospital. And inevitably at times like this, we get calls from people concerned about dogs. Joined on the line by Christine. Christine, good morning.
Good morning, Donald. Yes, I am absolutely shocked that nothing has been done. I've been trying for the past 7 years or longer to try to get the government to bring in a law that would make it compulsory for all dogs to be microchipped. And the reason for that is to make owners responsible, because as it is, they can go and get a license for their dog. No microchip, you know, compulsory, and you go out for a walk, and there's nothing. Feces here, especially if you go to the beach, feces, it is unbelievable.
Now, I know that the response to this is going to be, we're going to get hundreds, probably, of WhatsApps and texts from people saying, my dog is a wonderfully behaved dog. I'm a dog lover. We're all dog lovers. We all look after our dogs. We all take care of our dogs. We're all very careful with our dogs. And a very, 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 very small bunch of irresponsible people is spoiling things for the vast majority of dog owners who are completely irresponsible and completely trustworthy.
Yes. I was reared on a farm. And God rest my late father, James Carlin. He trained... Border Collies. They were all papers, you know, they were proper licensed and all. They trained, bred and trained Border Collies. And the breed of them are all over Inishowen, County Derry, the same, you know, breed. I am talking about people being responsible for their dogs. Also, they may talk, oh, I look after my dog. Try to tell that to someone that has sheep, and they go to their field in the morning and the sheep are, some lambs dead, some sheep torn to pieces, you know. It's to make dog owners responsible. And as well, the government needs to put in a lot of money for dog wardens, because there isn't enough of dog wardens.
Yeah, I believe there's, I think, two in Donegal at the moment, and they operate on... I believe there's two in Donegal at the moment, if I'm right, and they operate on a 9-to-5 basis, Monday to Friday, and that's the extent of it in Donegal at the moment, if I'm correct.
Isn't that absolutely crazy? You think of the heartbreak of families that they're either their adults or children attacked by dogs. It's a terror they will live with psychologically all their life, as well as a family who has lost loved ones by being attacked by dogs.
But I think the two most high-profile cases, the one in Kerry this week, and the one that was in Limerick, the tragedy in Limerick a few weeks back. My understanding is both of those were cases where the dog was in the home, the dog was within the family. It isn't that they were attacked by strange dogs owned by strangers. The dog was within the home in both cases.
There have been a lot of stray dogs attacked people in the past. And as well, if microchipping was brought in, made compulsory, it would make individual dog owners very responsible for their animal. Wouldn't you think so?
It's a very valid point, Christine, and thank you very much indeed for making it.
Appreciation and thanks. Mm-hmm. Can I give a little mention to my choir at the university in Letterkenny, Coyle Nicale, and our amazing director, Veronica McCarn.
I had the pleasure of doing a bit of work with you in June, if you recall, Christine. Indeed, thank you very much indeed. I had the pleasure of doing a bit of work with you at the Relay for Life. And thank you indeed, Christine. That's Christine there. Now, we were looking at Errigal, and a caller says, For God's sake, it's a larger car park is needed, not ramps. Ramps would be the easy way out, and that's what's being sought. Another caller says, yeah, toilets would be a good idea on Errigal. A caller says, I wish someone would do something about Lacca Bridge on the way to Carrickart. It's so dangerous with overgrowth. Visibility is bad. You can't see signs with reeds hanging onto the road on the corner. It means you need to cross the road to get past. Also, I just listened to Councillor Canning speaking in regards to the council being on top of the council development plan. Is this the same county development plan that has failed to take into account the tens of thousands affected by defective blocks, including well in excess of 1,100 council tenants paying rent to the council for council houses affected by defective blocks? The plan makes no provision for the housing requirements of the victims of defective blocks or private council tenants. This is despite the county council being aware of the impending disaster for a decade. Time for them to stop the back pat and get their heads out of the sand and start to meaningly address the housing crisis. Now, caller, in fairness, that, and I was present in the council chamber for a number of those meetings discussing the county development plan, and that point indeed was raised and raised very articulately by a number of councillors. The response from the council is that Donegal County Council administers the defective block scheme on behalf of the government. Donegal County Council has no hand, act or part in putting those plans together, and there is no place in the county development plan where provision for defective blocks and so on is made. That the county development plan follows a very strict structure, as it were, and it's intended for outlining the conditions for development, and it's got to follow patterns and parameters, and addressing the defective block issue within those parameters is not part of the plan's remit, and that was the response given by officials, that the council is very much administering on behalf of the government, and the plan does not have any purview when it comes to the blocks issue. But a number of councillors had raised it and continue to do so. Now we're going to go to Danny Maletic, and I hope I am pronouncing that name. Danny's on Zoom. Danny, good morning, and I've probably made a complete balls of that, have I?
not to worry. Maletic, but it's fine.
Maletic. You would roll with it indeed. And thank you very much indeed. Danny is with us on Zoom because we're speaking about the Irish Digital Nomad Conference, which is taking place in Dunloe and Gwydor. It's taking place at the moment, actually, getting underway tomorrow. It's getting underway tomorrow, last until September 1st in Dunloe and Gwydor, and it's showcasing Donegal as a top destination for remote workers and digital nomads in Ireland. Great to talk to you, Danny. And this has become one of the most important things, particularly since COVID, but even before COVID it was starting to grow, that more and more now people can do their work anywhere, and Donegal is benefiting from that.
Definitely. Donegal is such a great destination for digital nomads, and this is one thing we want to highlight during the event and also showcase it to more people, those who are coming that are internationals, but also remote workers across the country that may be based elsewhere. Why not move to Donegal?
We know there's been a lot of work done by Donegal County Council, by others and others, in terms of bringing in the hubs. There's various hubs. GTEC are doing a lot of work. Mm-hmm. Others are doing a lot of work. And we're seeing these digital hubs building up in places like Carrigar, places like Cawdor, places like Buncrana in Inishowen. And more we're saying to people, look, you can come in, you can go into this hub, you can sit down, you can get a little area where you can do your work, and you can come in for an hour or 2 hours or a day or whatever. And even now people are being given the chance, and vouchers being offered. If you come to Donegal for a week, we're going to give you a day or two for free if you want to do some work.
Exactly, exactly. There's a lot of work being done locally, and the council and some of the local hubs are also involved in the event itself. There'll be representatives from different GTECs and connected hubs as well at the event, from Inishowen as well. And the goal is really to together try and show what are all the different options across the entire county of Donegal. Because there is a lot going on. And then also during the event itself, it's a 5-day event. It actually starts next Wednesday on the 28th, 5 days long, Wednesday to Sunday, with talks and workshops in the mornings. And then in the afternoons, we actually bring people around to show them the type of things they could do in their free time while they're in Donegal, whether they get moved to be based there for a short time or actually move to live and stay in Donegal long term. So surfing, hiking, and things like that. And then there's evening activities as well. So every single day is jam packed with activities, from kind of learning opportunities, networking and socializing, and really just to give Donegal a kind of a center stage, an opportunity to be on center stage, to be seen as a location that's really appealing to many.
Digital nomad is a phrase that's going to be a new phrase for many. Just unpack the phrase, if you would, and tell us exactly what is a digital nomad.
Sure. I love unpacking this one. So digital can work online in the kind of digital sphere in any way, shape or form. And nomad being a person that can move and doesn't necessarily stay based somewhere permanently. So most digital nomads, they may have a base or two or three, but they don't have necessarily one permanent base. And the idea is that because of their remote or online type of work that they do, whether they're self-employed or working for someone else, they are free to relocate or at least change locations for shorter or longer periods of time, depending on their circumstances. So they're a bit more location independent, let's say.
And it gives them the opportunity to travel. And it doesn't necessarily need to be self-employed. I mean, people who work for government agencies, say the HSE or whatever, they may do 90% of their work on their computers, and it doesn't matter where the computer is as long as they can get a connection. So theoretically, people can go on their holidays, visit Donegal, drop into the hub, do a bit of work in the hub, and then avail of the various amenities in the county. They can travel on and, you know, they can be on the road 24/7 and still do a full-time job.
They actually can, definitely. If someone has a remote or a hybrid role in Ireland, they could definitely come and spend time in Donegal, as you said, work from one of the hubs, because the facilities are great. The internet is incredible. In some places in the hubs there, the internet is stronger than it would be potentially in parts of Dublin even. So it's an opportunity to be in a place that's surrounded by nature and then actually in their free time go for lovely walks on the beach, go horse riding on the beach, go kayaking. There's loads and loads to do, and it just means a very different lifestyle. And one huge thing that the concept of digital nomadism or remote work has enabled many people to do is to be able to improve their lifestyle, their work-life balance. So there are a lot of healthy kind of positive factors, or should I say direct consequences of this type of a lifestyle that change people's lives, whether it comes down to mental health, just changing the environment and being somewhere that feels good. And you wake up and maybe look at, you know, you're looking at the beach, having your coffee, finishing work, and then, you know, going outside and enjoying the nature. So there's a lot there. And Donegal has so many places like that that allow this kind of close connection to nature as well.
Now, you're the founder of Nomad Era, the Nomad Hub. And in a sense, you're at the forefront of identifying this new brand of worker and trying to see how that person can be accommodated. And Donegal County Council and others, as we say, they have been providing the hubs, they have been providing the centres, and they have been providing the vouchers and trying to make tentative steps into attracting people up to the county. I mean, the council's made a good start. It could, I'm sure, be doing more in terms of those vouchers, in terms of the amenity. Do you think more and more we're going to see people come in, you know, with that sort of lifestyle, that more and more people will choose, I'm just going to travel and work as I go, and it'll become more and more a lifestyle choice where people can actually get the best of both worlds, do their work, do their job, but at the same time be in a new place and be experiencing new places on a weekly or a monthly basis?
Yes, absolutely. I do think that it will become more of a thing when people realise how to do it. So the level of flexibility that exists. So whether someone lives in Ireland and is working remotely or for themselves, a lot of founders, startup owners or entrepreneurs themselves can do it, especially if they run their own business and they know, they sort of, I suppose, dictate their own hours and they have the control of the flexibility in that sense. But in general, I think, for example, with Nomad Era, last year we had this event as the annual conference and fest in Kerry, in County Kerry. And it was great. We showcased and showed around different parts of the county. Since then, a couple of people actually moved to Kerry. One in particular has been living there now for about a year. So the idea is very similar with Donegal, to try and really show what there is. With Nomad Era, the annual event, we actually try to circulate and rotate around the country and showcase different counties each year. However, with Donegal in itself, because the council and the local bodies and organizations are very interested in having a more active kind of nomadic lifestyle, showcasing the opportunities and having those bases there. One of our other goals is also to set up a more active digital nomad hub. So it will be very closely linked with the existing physical hubs, the work hubs, the GTECs, but to actually have a community of individuals that are living there, based there, you know, maybe they come and go, but that there is an actual physical place where they go to, that has, that's very, very, kind of accommodating to the needs of the digital nomads and lots of events and activities. So a thriving, active hub, that's kind of a goal, a direction. These are some of the conversations happening behind the scenes, working with more and more local partners, different parts of the different kind of business networks and hubs across the county to see what else can be done. But there is, there's, you know, there are things in place currently, and there will be more, I'm sure.
We know that National Broadband Ireland are striving to implement the broadband plan. Now, it's going to be 2-3 years before it's fully implemented, and we get regular releases from them telling us that they've done more and more areas of Donegal, and they're working in more and more areas of Donegal. The more that happens, the more we get fibre broadband available, and we're being told now, of course, there's more and more available on satellite. There's more and more other options as well as what NBI are providing. Are we getting to a point where, you know, Donegal, the traditional issue always was, in a place like Donegal, we need better broadband, we don't have the broadband coverage to meet the needs of people. Are we going to get to the point where that coverage will be there to the extent that not only will we meet the needs of the people that are here, but we'll actually start attracting in more digital nomads and others?
Oh, I'd love to say yes to that. The truth is, I don't know, but I really hope so. But I really think that there's a lot being done, and the opportunities in Donegal as a county in terms of nature primarily are just humongous. So even if someone's based a 30-minute drive or a 45-minute drive from a beautiful mountain or the cliffs or a beach where they can, you know, surf and whatnot, it's still very close to compared to many other cities across the world, where they're not, like, it might be, you know, big cities even across the US where they're nowhere near mountains or beaches that are, you know, at such proximity. And Ireland being a relatively small country, it's very easy to get around the entire country. And then there's the Donegal Airport, which makes things even more accessible, you know, like quick flights to even just to Dublin. Well, it just means the accessibility is still going to be there. The opportunities are still there. Like, with or without, I just think that with the hubs themselves having really good, steady, reliable internet nowadays, this is such a great starting point. It can go from there, definitely. But even at that, being based next to one of these hubs and then driving for 30 minutes to the beach sounds pretty idyllic.
Absolutely, it does. It's getting underway in Gwydir and Dunlow. It starts on tomorrow week, August the 28th, lasts until the 1st, which is a Sunday. Danny Miletic, thank you very much indeed. We wish you all the best with it, and we look forward to see more and more digital nomads coming to Donegal, and hopefully some of them will stop being nomads and put down some roots. They fall in love with the place. Could well happen. We'll see
what happens.
Danny, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And everyone's welcome to have a look at the website, nomadera.com, for more information. And also there's still registrations available, so come and join us.
Thank you very much.
Hope to meet you there.
Okie dokie. Thank you, Danny. Paul's joined us in studio. We'll be going over to Paul in just a moment. Just want to mention our Mega Summer Draw. Have you bought your tickets for the Highland Radio Mega Summer Draw? Four chances to win big. 2,500 being given away every Friday, plus 10,000 on the 6th of September. That'll be happening here live on the 9th of the Noon Show with Greg. The earlier you're in, the more chances you have to win. All you have to do is buy a ticket at highlandradio.com. You click on Mega Summer Draw and answer a simple question. Then you choose one ticket for €10, 6 for 50 or 10 for 80. And there's, we say, opportunities to win €2,500 on Fridays. I think it'll be on the Breakfast Show with Lee this coming Friday. Then it'll be on the 9 Noon Show with, on the Around the Northwest with John the following week. It'll be on the Jive Time with David the week after. And then the final draw for €10,000 is going to be made here by Greg and Fionnuala and the team on the 9 Noon Show. And that will be on September 6th. So if you want to take part in that, you can go to highlandradio.com and go and take a look at that. Now, delighted to say that we are joined in studio by Paul McLaughlin, who's a gardener at Balladurg. And Paul, you are very welcome indeed.
Thank you, Donal.
Great to see you. The weather hasn't really taken off. I mean, has the summer been a write-off from a gardening point of view?
Not a write-off, perhaps, but very close to it. So it is now. And there's some stuff looking kind of well at the minute, but nah, just there's been no pleasure in gardening this year at all. Like, the idea of gardening is sort of for the summertime, this period now, you should be sitting out enjoying your garden. And like, there's not been that many evenings this year where you could actually do that.
We didn't even get the traditional 2.5 weeks of brilliant sunshine when the kids were doing the leaving cert, which I felt really cheated by, because you could almost set your clock by that every year.
Exactly. I suppose the only hope now is if they go back to school.
They go back to school next week, so hopefully not the next week.
We'll get 2 weeks of sunshine
in the first 2 weeks of September. Blue moon. And that's an important time for gardening as well, particularly at night.
Yes, particularly at night. All right, now there's a superstition, you would call it, that if you go harvesting it under a blue moon, you're guaranteed abundance for life. And more important, if you go picking flowers, you're guaranteed beauty for life. Mm. So I went picking tomatoes last night because the beauty thing may have sailed. But
yeah. I watched a film on Netflix last night, so I mean, that's me doomed, I'm afraid.
Yes, I think you have another opportunity tonight. Yeah.
And actually, I commented on this actually on the paper review this morning, because the moon, particularly in Greece, Turkey, and some areas, is actually red, and that's a result of wildfires.
Yes, wildfires in Canada. I was on the road there very late Monday night. It was about 1 o'clock I was out, driving about, and the moon is pure red.
So yeah, I did notice that myself one night too. But there are plenty of plants that are looking well at the moment, and there are still jobs to do in the garden. I mean, we're not saying to gardeners, look, the weather is bad, go on, sit down, have a cup of tea. I mean, there are things that can be done.
Absolutely, there's plenty of stuff to be done. I suppose if you're into growing food, there's plenty of harvest to be done at the minute. In terms of jobs around the garden, now is traditionally time. Probably a question you get asked most in the garden centre is, when do you cut back plants?
Yeah.
Normally the answer to that is just after they finish flowering. So we're coming into the autumn now, a lot of summer plants will be finished flowering, so now's the opportunity to give them a wee cut back, give them a tidy up.
And just freshen up the beds as well.
Yes,
and just
exactly,
make sure In terms of roses, a lot of work to be done with those at the moment.
Yes, unfortunately it's not been a great year for roses. The constant sort of rain has, the flowers haven't performed the way they should, the sunshine levels aren't there. But if you're growing your roses, black spot's a problem this year too. So unfortunately, just I suppose if you're under spraying, just maintain the spraying. Otherwise, if you have sort of diseased foliage on them, just remove that. Just make them look a bit better. And obviously remove it from the plant, because there are obviously the possibility of reinfecting.
In terms of lawns, one thing we haven't needed this year is sprinklers. And they would be very wet at the moment. I mean, yes. Is that having an impact on the lawn care?
Exactly, it would have. Normally at this time of year, whenever it's actually dry, you'd be lifting the blades almost to not stress the lawn as much, because we struggled for water at this time of year. Whereas this is definitely not the case this year. You'd almost be lifting the blades to stop her clogging in the wet stuff. But if you do get a dry period, maybe an opportunity, if you have a lot of moss in the lawn, which comes about with the wet climate, you can actually use this as an opportunity to scarify it, maybe remove some of that before the winter hits.
Yeah. Now, let's take a few of the questions that have been coming in. And one of them is, how soon can you plant roses?
How soon can you plant roses? Normally, modern gardening stuff's available in garden centres and pots, so theoretically you can plant them any time of year. But traditionally, older gardeners would have went just same as the shellfishes, whenever there's an hour in the month. People generally looked at planting that sort of from September right up to like March, April, or whatever was a traditional planting time, because the plants weren't sort of going to be suffering for water. They'll establish better at a moister time of the year.
Now, caller says, I can grow Griselinia, and apologies for the, I suspect, incorrect pronunciation.
No, perfect.
I can grow Griselinia easily from slips by taking cuttings, but I have no success with taking cuttings from red robin.
Yes.
What am I doing wrong?
What are you doing wrong? A few possibilities there. Griselinia is very easy to take the slips from, because it's sort of the new growth on it softer. If you're taking slips this time of year, sort of softwood cuttings or sort of semi-ripe cuttings would be what you'd be taking. So the key there, I think, would be don't take too much of the branch with you. Only sort of work in the top 6 inches or so, because that's sort of, what would be the way to describe it? It's sort of more actively growing, so it should theoretically take that wee bit easier. So if you're going into your superstitions as well, they reckon if you're ever planting on cuttings of that, do them in odd numbers, because fairies take against them if they're in even numbers.
Fair enough.
Stick to the odd numbers.
So put in seven, not six.
Exactly. And the thing with cuttings as well is, in a practical sense, you're never going to get 100% of them.
Yeah.
So if you want 20, plant 40.
Yeah.
Or 41.
You just got ahead of me. I've noticed a small weed like an evergreen these past few years. It'll be on the edge of a footpath. I can't get rid of it. Weed killer doesn't work and you have to pull it out. It's a flat weed with round leaves. How do I get rid of it?
Suppose there are a few different, if you're looking at an organic sort of way of doing it, physically removing it. As best you'll never get the roots, if you know what I mean, but you can do it that way. If it's in the footpath, a lot of people are getting into sort of more like using traditional things like salt even. Spreading like road grit and salt on it might help. If the weed killer is not being effective, it's obviously someone quite strong. So someone like that there, basically, if you're having, if weed killer won't work, a lot of time it's because the plant can't absorb it. So sometimes if you walk on it first, it actually breaks the surface, and then any product you're using can get into the plant.
Caller's noticed a small weed, like an evergreen. Oh, we've done that one. A hawthorn hedge. It's been growing for over 100 years. One part of it has now started to die. I mean, do hedges reach a point where they do start dying off? Do they need maintenance? Can this be rescued?
Yes, absolutely. It can be rescued. And obviously, if it's 100 years old, it's very much worth rescuing. Probably sort of there are a lot of knowledge out there in the sense that the first thing I would look into would be hedge laying, which is a very traditional sense. You basically cut the established plant through about three quarters of the way and you lie it down. It was a means of maintaining the hedge that the cows still stayed in while allowing it to regrow. So you use the old bit of the plant to block the gaps. So if you YouTube even hedge laying, it's a thing that's become very popular in the last few years. But it's not impossible to do. There's probably a wee bit of skill involved. I think it's someone most people could tackle, you know.
Caller says, too, I have a large boundary area. I'm looking for a cheap bare root hedging evergreen, if possible.
Yes, cheap evergreen. Probably evergreen, the Gristlinia, is going to be your most likely option. Some of them established quite well. You can buy them in pots or you can buy them bare root, generally from December to March or so. But for the cheapest one, once again, back to your thorn, would be the cheapest. Not evergreen, just you're not going to have the leaves for the winter time. But very good and very nice effective hedge, too.
Now, caller says, how do I take a slipping from a hydrangea?
Slipping from a hydrangea, much like we're saying about the red robin, don't be tempted to take too much with you. Take only about the top 6 inches or so. Once again, like say, YouTube's very good for that.
Yeah.
You can actually look it up and you see physically it's been done, if you know what I mean. So, once again, take plenty. Take about the top 6 inches, leave about two leaves on the top of it, and don't take a branch that has a flower on it. Yeah. Apparently, one without a flower would be much more likely to take.
We spoke earlier about lawns, and a caller says, my lawn is dying at the roots. I've put down fertilizer. It's doing nothing. What could be the cause of the dead grass?
The cause of the dead grass, obviously there are a few things could be the cause of it, but the most likely one I would fear for would be the dreaded leather jackets, which are the immature daddy long legs. So generally, for someone like that there, if you actually just cover a bit overnight with, like a bin bag or something like that, lift that in the morning, and if you see these wee sort of inch long grey grubs on top of it, that'll be the most likely cause. But for any sort of thing like that, take a picture of the grass, even take a wee video, bring it to your local garden centre. Yeah. They should be able to diagnose it better from that. But I fear that'll be the most likely. If the roots are dying off, that'll be the most likely cause.
Caller wants to know more about azaleas. They have four different varieties. What can they do to make them more healthy looking?
Make them more healthy looking. I suppose the main thing about an azalea is azalea would be kind of a cousin to the rhododendron. As much as anything else, the four varieties, I'd say there's probably about 4,000 out there. Lovely plants. So they are, generally, they're what's known as an ericaceous plant, which means they don't like lime. So if you're fertilising it, make sure it's not someone that involves lime, and even maybe top dress the ones they have with a lime-free compost, which is available in most garden centres. So just keep an eye on that, and they should flourish. So they should, and they're great for early colour. So they're due chatting April, May. They're all sort of coincide with the Masters golf and versus TV. Yeah. Gets a real buzz going,
of course,
about them.
Yeah, not necessarily garden related, but caller is painting their garden boundary walls. And they have trouble with cats who keep on crossing at the same spots, and they have the new paint destroyed over and over again. Is there anything you can do to sort of try and stop cats from getting over the wall?
Very, very difficult. So it is. A lot of people use different sort of scaring methods, like you see them put out like 2 litre bottles of water so the cat sees the reflection and sees and stuff like that. But cats are very smart, so they can be very hard to dissuade, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But the only good point they have there is if the cat's using the one spot at all times, if they have some means of keeping the cat away from that spot. I've heard of people using stuff like cayenne pepper too, to spread it about, so if the cat's sniffing about, it'll get the nose stung a wee bit.
Yeah.
So it'll just make
so it. So if there's a freshly painted part, maybe put the cayenne down there and maybe that'll just.
Yeah. And obviously it's gonna ruin his moment for a while, but it's not going to do him any harm.
Caller asking about snowdrop bulbs and carolilly bulbs that are coloured. Where can they be bought?
Probably most of them sort of spring bulbs are going to be in the garden centres from about the first weeks of September. Snowdrops can be hard to establish from bulbs, so you can. Traditional way of doing it was to get an existing patch, which I think sort of frowned upon at the minute because you're sort of disturbing other things. Yeah. But if you have somebody with a garden that's willing to donate them to you.
Now, you were talking earlier about cutting back. A caller says, the weather's been very poor, so I cut back a lot of my flowers early. Is there anything I should be doing now with regards to feeding? Because is there a risk that cutting back too early could actually damage growth next year? Is there something they should be doing now?
Give them a general feed. If it's sort of a shrub plant like that there, something like poultry manure is going to have a good, well-balanced, and because it's organic, it releases a certain length of time, so you're not going to overdose with it.
Mm-hmm.
So something like that there would do the trick.
Right, and the final question I have to hand is, I have two more. The cherry tree and a plum tree, the flowers come on, but only two plums grow. The cherries stay green and don't ripen at all. What can I do to fix this?
Suppose the plums, the pollination, if the flowers are there, obviously the flowers are maybe not getting pollinated as well as they should. So if you introduce another plum tree into it, would help. So it would, just to get the pollination going at that particular time of year. The cherries not ripening. Funny, they should ripen, but sometimes what happens there is the cherries don't ripen, then as soon as they do, the birds get them.
Yeah.
So the birds see them. The birds see them before you do, if you know what I mean. But general fertiliser this time of year would help, but it's important around St. Patrick's Day, 1st April, give them a dose of potash. Should actually build them up and buzz up the fruit and prospect of them.
And finally, a caller asking, if you cut back briars, what can you put on to get rid of them?
There are a few products out there, so a lot of them be sort of agricultural grade stuff, if you know what I mean, but there are a few brushwood killers that, so probably if you go to your local sort of farm supplier, some garden centres would carry them as well. There are a few different products, but I'm not exactly sure which. I wouldn't be comfortable giving the brand name, if you know what I mean.
Of course, yeah.
But no, if you go to sort of, go to like your farm supplier, they'll definitely be able to point you in the right direction. But if you want to go in a more organic way, sort of just keep cutting them back and digging out the roots as best you can. It'll take a while, but you can get there.
Before I let you go, I can't help notice, but you have a lovely herbaceous piece of green in front of you sticking out of a plastic bag, and I suspect there is some lovely fresh veg in that
yes,
bag.
Yes, exactly.
Want to show us your produce?
Yes, absolutely. There's a few, where's the camera at? A few carrots we brought. I'm after making the fish. Lara, the last time I was in, I promised Greg that I would bring on a lock of potatoes, and it was just too wet this morning to go digging. But I had these harvesters from the weekend.
That looks amazing. That's so different to what you see in the supermarket.
Absolutely,
it looks so much better as well.
Yeah, pretty much. You have the likes of these. They're obviously not all perfect by any means, and that's sort of the benefit you have of growing your own, if you know what I mean. So you have the knobbly bits and everything else, but definitely the flavour is there.
Absolutely.
So it is.
And, you know, this is the time for harvesting, as you were saying. So, I mean, you know, people should be, you know, looking at, I mean, you know, if people have been planting, hopefully they'll be going, they really look good, I have to say, fair play. Are they your own personally, or are they from the centre?
Most of the veg is grown in sort of a team effort, if you know what I mean. So it is. But I know it's just from down there, right?
Yeah.
Like I say, we've good crop onions going on at the minute, and the potatoes are coming on well too, so.
Paul, pleasure as always. Thank you very much indeed. And I know a lot of people listen to the slot, you know, to get advice on things like this. And hopefully you've been able to answer people's questions. Thanks as always. And we'll see you back at Brighton Breezy next week.
Perfect. Thank you.
Bye, Paul. Take care. Bye. And you're welcome back to the 9 till noon show on this Tuesday morning. Now, we have another guest in studio. Delighted to welcome Andrew William Tinney, who is an author, a playwright, a writer of musicals, and an all-round creative genius. He's a man I've had the pleasure of working with in the past. And Andrew is behind a musical which is taking place on Saturday next in On Greenan Theatre in Letterkenny. And Andrew, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Donald. Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. Brown Days. Meet the teens of Brown's Academy whose desires and worry occupy their each and every waking moment. It's an interesting concept. Is this High School Musical Part 2? Is Brown's Academy rather different?
Yeah, well, it's slightly different. I mean, originally this was sort of ran in 2022. And back then it had sort of been a musical comedy, I suppose, which was sort of looking at teenage life. But it grew from that, because the more I've worked with teenagers over the last years, the more I've realized that they do have these sort of legitimate struggles. Because if you can remember being a teenager, your emotions are dialed up to 11 and everything seems worse than what it is. And they do have all these sort of things that they have to work through. And I think now that I'm 30 plus, mm-hmm. you know, you look back in life and you go, the things that you worried about, you probably still worry about now, but you're older and able to deal with it better. So that is the core sort of message to Brown Days, is that yes, at the time when you're a teenager, this seems like a big deal. In 5 years' time, 6 years' time, you'll be able to cope with it better, and it should be Yeah,
and
okay.
I suppose as teens we all said at some point, my life is over, my life is ruined, things will never be the same again. And 5 years later, couldn't remember what it is we said it about.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, one, you know, the third song in the musical is entitled "I Hate Everything," so that just sort of gives you.
I don't know. That's, I couldn't argue that wasn't me when I was 15. Because it probably was. There, I heard an old saying once that when you're young, at the age of 12, you think your parents know everything. At the age of 15, you think they know nothing.
Yes.
And at the age of 21, you're amazed what they've learned in the meantime, which I always thought was actually quite true.
And when you become a parent, you realise you actually do know nothing.
Absolutely. When you become a parent, you realise you're making it up as you go along.
Yes.
But the most important thing is don't let them know that.
No.
They think you know what you're doing, which is the most important thing. It's really great to see this, Andrew, because there is so much talent in this region, and I will say region because obviously there's talent from Strabane, there's talent from Donegal. Yep. I know your Bard Theatre that's putting this on is based predominantly in Strabane. We saw a great
Wherever I end up is usually where it's based.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, and you are no stranger to Anglin, and you've been on there with the Letterkenny Musical Society, you've been on there with the Lifford Players, and you've been on there with a number of other organisations as well, and further afield. But I mean, when you look at what's happening, I mean, there's been recent productions by Encore, with whom you have family ties. There's been a great production of Rent. Went on a Merrion Forum last week. Emmett Stewart from Strabane put that one together. An amazing show. There's so much happening on the local stages, being put together by local amateurs. I mean, it's musicals, play, drama. It's really alive and well in this region.
It is, and it's great to see, you know, after the last sort of 4 years that we've had where there was sort of nothing, now that it's come back in full force. And I love giving the teenagers the opportunity to perform and to take it. And credit to them. I mean, this is a musical that no one has really ever seen before. It was run in 2022, but out of that, you know, only three songs have remained and the rest are brand new. So audiences have never heard them before. So as you say, you're talking about talent, the talent of these young people to take something that, you know, they can't go to YouTube and listen to. They have to sort of just learn in the space.
And from your point of view as the author, you've written the text, you've written the songs.
Yeah.
But you're now in a sense, okay, and you are the director, so you have some control, but you're taking your work and in a sense you're handing it to other people and saying, make this happen. Make this real. And you, as the writer, have to put trust in them to do
that. It's the lazy option, isn't it? but no, yeah, so we have Zara Montgomery from the town here, who's a wonderful musical director, a wonderful singer, and she does all things music. She's great. And the pupils are the cast are currently working with Tierna Kate Fox and her sister Blaine, who are actually from Oma, so have come up to do the choreography. Mm-hmm. So it's great, and actually I was watching them this morning, and we talked about that song "I Hate Everything," and that's the song that they're looking at this morning, and just seeing that sort of come to life with the choreography is just a fantastic thing. And even watching on their faces how it comes to life for them, as opposed to, you know, because I'm not a choreographer, so when we were doing the songs, it was them sitting and singing it.
Yeah.
But then once they're adding the choreography to it, it takes it to an excellent
level. And to see what you've put on the page actually translate into, you know, is it what you expected? Is it different to what you expected? I mean,
it's better than what I expected.
How do you feel? I mean, when you were actually watching this develop now at rehearsals with a view toward it actually going on stage on the 24th, and I hope to be there to see it.
Well, thank you.
I certainly do. I wasn't sure if I'd be about actually on that day, but I will be, so I'm certainly hoping to get there. In terms of it becoming real on the stage, you're the director, you're the author, but ultimately you aren't going to be on the stage. The end result is going to be you standing back, whether you're backstage, whether you're at the top, over by the sound desk or whatever, wherever you are, you're effectively going to be watching your vision come to life on that stage. Is it hard to let go?
No, not really. I think I've gotten used to it because I've been working with teens and young people and writing different things the last, how many years now? Maybe 7 or 8 years?
Yeah.
You lose track. But it's just become sort of something that... It's still wonderful, don't get me wrong. It's still something, whenever you see something you've created, something that you've written come to life before you, it's that lovely thing. But I don't... No, I've gone beyond, I think, the sort of the... letting it go, if that makes sense.
You've also been working on becoming the new Tolkien, writing fantasy novels.
Well, yes, I haven't written a fantasy novel in a few years, but I have I've written a few. Yeah, I've written three at the minute.
I love that. I haven't written it. I've only written three, but that was years ago.
Yeah, it was years ago. So I've only written three, but that was years ago. So yeah, I've done a couple of fantasy novels too. The novel that I'm working on currently is actually historical fiction. So I've kind of put the fantasy on the back shelf for now. But it's they're always ticking in the back of your mind.
So it's obviously a hugely creative mind. So you've written three fantasy novels. You're writing a historical fiction novel at the moment. You've written how many plays at this stage?
I can't remember. I haven't written that down. Yeah. Three full length plays. This being one of them. And then I've written like various shorts and one acts and different things.
Yeah. And a lot of people sort of, you know, sometimes you speak to people and they don't differentiate between a musical and a play. And it's an interesting one because really, you know, is a musical a play that happens to have songs or is more a play that has songs. There's a lot of libretto. There's a lot of spoken word on stage.
There's a lot of spoken word on stage, I think. And that's one of the things I suppose that you talked about earlier when it's developing in front of me is that I'm seeing more and more ways that I can make it, I suppose, more musical and then like different verses, just refrains, various things throughout the script that when I was writing it without a huge musical head on me wasn't able to see, but now that it's coming to life, so it's been great to sit and to watch it come to life, but also to see how I can further develop it into something for the future.
Obviously, it's on in Lungrannan Theatre on Saturday, August 24th. That's not going to be the end of Brown Days. Will we see it on other stages in the region? I mean, the great theatre, the Audience Strabane, obviously. You've got Playhouse, you've got Millennium Forum in Derry. You've got plenty of options on the stages. There's OMA involvement as well.
That's right.
The Struil Arts Centre. Are we going to see this across the region?
That's certainly the plan. I know the next step that we've talked about is to actually get together a cast recording so that when we do put it on again, there will be something tangible that's there that people can actually go and listen to and sort of, sort of get to know the music before they see the show, which people do for musicals.
Andrew William Tilley, the writer and director of Brown Days, which is taking place on Saturday night coming in on Grinnell Theatre. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having me.
Take care, Andrew, and may it be a huge success.
Thank you.
Now, we're going to go to Mark McCollum. We mentioned during the paper review the consultation on a redress scheme for mother and baby homes, and there seems to be something of an impasse with the government's negotiator and the churches. Mark McCollum joins us on the line. Mark, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donald. How are you?
Very well indeed. Mark, that's the situation in the Republic, but there's also a similar situation taking place north of the border in Northern Ireland. You're keeping an eye on both. I mean, how are things going in terms of the situation here? Obviously, in the Republic, a lot of concern that this seems to be stalling over the issue of money.
The consultation and the process in the Republic has been just a litany of sort of failures and sort of missed opportunities over the years. You know, the design of the process, the implementation of the process, and now actually who's going to be paying for the process. It's just been a catalogue of, you know, how not to do a consultation or to do an inquiry. In the Northern Ireland, they've stalled because the executive office wasn't actually sitting because of the assembly wasn't in operation. Now there's a consultation process to try and get people to come forward to engage with and shape the legislation that's going to be demanded for the public inquiry. The inquiry in Northern Ireland has basically taken a lot of the lessons from what has happened, and there's mistakes that have been made in the Republic and in other jurisdictions, and sort of trying to learn from those and to implement a sort of a more robust and fit for purpose inquiry.
Now, we have seen north of the border, we've seen the adverts appear in the papers on both sides of the border, it has to be said, encouraging people that have a submission to make it. And you obviously would be encouraging people that have any experience of this to make that submissions, make their voices heard and make sure that their perspective is on the table in these discussions.
Yeah, absolutely. The consultation is a critical step in addressing the wrongs that have been done to so many people in these institutions over the years. And the Assembly wants to hear for those people directly affected, whether you're born in an Anglin laundry or any of the mother and baby homes or your loved ones who were there. It's but gathering testimonies and understanding the scale of what happened and shaping what justice looks like for those, you know, those people who have been impacted. It's essential now because for years there's been silence and denial. And this is now a chance for people to speak up and tell the truth about what actually had happened. And this can lead to real change. Whether that's like, we've had official acknowledgements and apologies. We now need reparations and more robust measures.
Given that we're at the consultation stage at the moment in terms of timelines to a point where reparations redress will be offered, how far down the line do you believe that will be, and is it going to happen quickly enough?
Well, this is the thing. Time is a luxury but we don't have. You know, this has been dragging on now for over 3 years in Northern Ireland and even longer in the Republic. And it is hard. People have been asked to, you know, looking for people now to revisit trauma and talk about things that experience that happened to them. And it can be challenging for people. And there's a really sensitive topic. I think the consultation process is due to, you know, the initial phase is due to wrap up on the 19th of September. And we again encourage people to come forward and ensure people that is designed to be supportive, confidential and safe. There's no pressure to share more than people that are comfortable with. Even small contributions anonymously, if necessary, can make a big difference. And this is all about community. People are not alone. You know, there's over 14,000 women and girls have been through this situation in Northern Ireland and their children. And by coming forward, you're not just helping yourself. You're ensuring that the future generations know what happened and that these kind of abuses can never, never be repeated.
Mark, thank you very much indeed. We'll be keeping a close eye on this, of course. And just to repeat, anyone who has any perspective or any experience of this should take part in the consultation process. A number of public events taking place as well in the coming weeks. And if people can, they should look at going to those too, taking place in Derry and elsewhere. But for the moment, Mark, thank you very much indeed.
Cheers, all. Thank
you. Okay, look, Mark, you take care. That's Mark McCollum there. And that is the end of the 9 till noon show for today, Tuesday. We're back Wednesday, of course, with another packed programme. John Breslin is up next around the Northwest. I want to say a very special thank you to Shannon and to Caroline for all their help on the phones, and Caroline producing as always, and Shannon taking care of me digitally as well. A special thanks to all our contributors, those who took part in the programme today, those who made contact with the show. Most importantly, thank you to you for listening. Without you, we would have no show. We're back, as I say, tomorrow at 9. John's up next. But for now, for myself, Donal Kavanagh, have a very good day.